Welcome to the Truth and Liberty broadcast. We believe we have a mandate to bring godly change to our nation and the world through the seven spheres or mountains of influence. To further this cause, we give away a product every week that will empower you to get involved in changing your life and changing our world. You can register for our weekly giveaway by subscribing at truthandliberty.net. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to receive weekly updates on guests, news, and much more. This is an interactive live cast, and we welcome your questions. To ask a question during the live cast, use the comment or chat features. Now, get ready to dive into this week's topics with our hosts on location in Colorado, USA.
Hello and welcome to our Monday Night Truth and Liberty live cast. I'm glad that you're with us. I've got Richard Harris with us. He's our chief counsel. And our guest tonight is Dr. Douglas Frank. We had him on a couple of months ago, and man, he's got some updates. This is something you will not want to miss. He's going to be talking primarily about the election and how it was stolen, and now it's gone beyond circumstantial into proof. And he's got some things, I think, that will really bless you. But before we get into that, we want you to participate and to be a part. You can actually ask questions. So Richard's going to give you that information. And also, we've got events coming up and a book giveaway and some other things. So this is Richard Harris, our chief counsel.
Thank you, Andrew. This is going to be a great live cast, so get your friends and family around the computer or whatever. You won't want to miss this. Our website is getting, I tell you, it's getting better every day, Andrew. We've got so much information on there, and it's cataloged, you know, according to the area and everything like that. I'll just mention under our resources page, we've just added research on COVID and experimental injections, a link to Liberty Counsel, and they're just leading the charge on that in an amazing way. The National Association of Christian Lawmakers. Andrew is on the board of that organization and went to the conference there 2 weeks ago, and they were passing amazing model legislation and resolutions. Check that out. We've added a new link for sexuality and gender, some findings from a doctor at UC Irvine, a psychologist, and everything showing how homosexuality and transgenderism is not, you're not born that way, and all kinds of evidence that you'll find useful. So check that out today. Also, we've got some amazing events coming up here at Andrew Womack Ministries, including the Healing is Here conference next week. It's incredible that it's already here, but this is one of the biggest events of the year here at AWM, and it is an amazing event. I'll tell you, the Book of Acts is still being written today, and at this conference, people are going to get healed. It's guaranteed. People getting out of wheelchairs, throwing their crutches away, blind eyes, deaf ears, even the dead raised, and I know that might seem amazing, but it happens. God is the same yesterday.
We had it happen at our Healing is Here conference in 2019 during the conference.
Yeah.
A person raised from the dead.
Well, and the baby, right? Yeah. Was that last year? So check that out online. And then also the Truth and Liberty Conference, Truth and Liberty Coalition Conference is September 10th through 11th at Karis Bible College. And you can check that out on awmi.net/events. And that is going to be a power-packed event. Andrew's going to be ministering along with Mario Murillo, E.W. Jackson, Dwayne Sheriff, Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, Congressman Doug Lamborn, and I know I'm missing somebody, including myself, but it's a long list. We're going to have workshops and exhibitors and how you can get involved and make a difference. You don't want to miss that. So check that out on the website. And then also the Destiny Conference, September 16th through the 18th. Andrew and Pastor Dwayne are going to be ministering there on how to find your destiny, right? How to discover God's calling and purpose in your life. So you don't want to miss that. That's going to be awesome. And every week here on Truth and Liberty, we give away a free product to new subscribers. So if you're not a subscriber of Truth and Liberty, I really encourage you to do that, because then you'll receive our emails and our blog posts and our articles, our action alerts, and they're just invaluable. So last week, we gave away a copy of Andrew's newest book, More Grace, More Favor. And I want to congratulate Hillary Thies. I hope I'm saying your name right, Hillary. You're the winner of that, and you should be getting an email about that shortly. This week, we're giving away one of my favorite books of Andrew's, which is A Better Way to Pray. And I love how this book opens. It says, "Hypocrites love to pray." That'll stop you in your tracks, won't it? But he's just quoting Jesus.
You'll either love me after that book or hate me, but it will not, you won't be indifferent.
Well, I'll guarantee if you'll put it into practice, you'll love him, because it'll change your life. So subscribe today and be eligible for that. And also, If you want to post questions or comments today, we'd love to see those. Do that in the chat function on our website or the comment section on Facebook. And then last is, we're supported by the generosity of our members. If you like what we're doing here at Truth and Liberty and you want to make a difference, you can help us by becoming a member of the Truth and Liberty Coalition. Just go on our website to the donate page, sign up to give a monthly recurring contribution of $5 or more per month. If you do, we're going to send you a free gift in the mail. And right now, we're still giving away Alex McFarland's awesome book, The Assault on America, How to Defend Our Nation Before It's Too Late. So become a member today and you'll get a free copy of that. And last thing is, if you need prayer, you want someone to agree with you in prayer, please call in to Andrew's phone line, and there are trained, spirit-filled prayer ministers standing by, 719-635-1111. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Andrew.
Okay, so tonight we have Dr. Douglas Frank with us. He was with us a couple of months ago, and he got his PhD from the University of Cincinnati in surface electroanalytical chemistry. I think that's the first time I've ever put those words in the same sequence. And he became famous for making 3D images of electrons on metal surfaces. Wow. I'll let him straighten all of this out. It's low energy electron diffraction. And anyway, he has his materials being taught in textbooks, and the guy's probably forgotten more than I'll ever know. He's a blessing. But what he had him on, we had him on last time, he did some algorithms that basically proved that there had to be irregularities in the 2016 elections, because it was just impossible for these things to happen. So that's my brief introduction, Dr. Frank, and I'll let you straighten it out. Maybe give us a synopsis of what I just said, what we've already covered, and then we'll get into what you want to share tonight.
Yeah, sure. Great to be with you. Sorry, suddenly I'm coughing. It was great to hear the name Mario Murillo there, Mr. Harris.
Yeah.
When I was a boy, his mother worked for my mother, and I used go to his revivals. That was many years ago in Northern California.
Yeah.
That was a flashback, I'll tell you.
Wow.
Anyway, back on topic. Yes, I'm a scientist. I'm a PhD scientist. I've been doing aggressively doing science for about 40 years, and yes, I discovered a new technique for imaging molecules on surfaces, and it made me famous for a while. But I left academics in 1996, went into business for myself, and I did a little part-time teaching on the side. But I've always been modeling elections my whole life, and I've always been modeling epidemics my whole life. So you can imagine what 2020 was like for me.
it was utopia.
Yeah. There was a lot going on, and really that's kind of how I came into the public eye other than scientific eye, because I was modeling COVID. And that's really how I got connected to the elections, because politicians would call me from around the country and ask for help with their COVID data so that they knew how to talk about it.
And let me interrupt for just a second and say that people might also know you through Mike Lindell. You've been on a lot of his broadcast, and he's using a lot of your information.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when he first discovered me back in March, he was so excited because the work that I was doing, the mathematical work I was doing, confirmed the electronic evidence he had. And that's one of the topics of today's program. I know when Richard and I discussed it earlier, that's a big piece of news for everybody. And we'll have to spend some time on that today. And when he met me, he made a movie called Scientific Proof. I gave your producers a slide of that. But the Scientific Proof, I went from nobody knowing who I was, except maybe for COVID, to suddenly 10 million people knowing who I was. And from then, I've been traveling the country and talking about elections to help people repair the elections, because they've been corrupted and they've been stolen from us. And also, since I was last with you, there's other big news. I got to be the keynote speaker at the president's rally in Ohio. And that was really exciting for me. I got to give a math class to 20,000 people. And I remember sitting there on, if you've ever been to a Trump rally, they're pretty rowdy, I gotta tell you. And I walk up to the podium and I'm staring at 20,000 people on a sunny, hot Saturday afternoon. And I'm thinking, I'm about to teach these people a bunch of mathematics. I wonder how this is gonna go. But I had these two big jumbotrons behind me, and it was amazing. Just as soon as I started going into it, suddenly the crowd just went completely silent, and you could hear all this oohs and ahs, and like people were getting it. So somebody joked afterward, it's just the largest math class in history. But it was a great day, and that was one of the things that's happened since we met last time. But the other really big news is the PCAPS, and that's the cyber symposium that Mr. Lindell has announced. He's tried to put this on twice before, but both times got stymied because of resistance. And you know, the FBI was threatening one time, and another time there were organized groups that were trying to interfere with the conference. So he's finally got it all set up. It's going to be in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, August 10th through 12th. He's been inviting people from all around the country, actually around the world, who are experts in cyber to come help. It's a lot of work. It's 37 terabytes of data, and I'll describe what those are in a minute. But this is an important event. I was talking to Richard earlier. You know, if you think of this whole series of events as a war effort, the cyber symposium is the Normandy invasion. And I can give you an example why this is important. About 2-3 months ago, I was in the state of Washington giving a talk about the election. And afterwards, one of the people in the audience raised their hand and said, "Hey, Dr. Frank, you know that first movie Mr. Lindell put out called Absolute Proof? In it, there was a listing of all these IP addresses that were being hacked." He says, "So I froze the camera and I wrote down a bunch of these, and I went to my local board of elections, and they were correct. Even the machine addresses of the voting machines." And I looked at him, I said, "Well, of course they were correct. You think Mr. Lindell made up 37 terabytes of data? Of course not. Of course they're correct." So can you imagine when he releases these 37 terabytes worth, 3,000 plus counties worth of data around the country, and people are knocking on their board of elections door saying, "Excuse me, sir, but how come our election was hacked? And here's the evidence." That is the Normandy invasion of this information war. And then, of course, after that, we'll have to have the battles. And then after that, let's have some trials. So that's kind of the way I've...
So, Dr. Frank, let me just say that the first time you were going through these algorithms that you had written, and you were proving statistically that they could not mathematically have happened in the same sequence that many times and stuff. It just, so in a sense, that's proof, but a lot of people could look at that and say, well, maybe it was coincidence or circumstantial. Now you're moving into actual, I guess, what do you call them?
We'd call it direct evidence.
Direct evidence instead of circumstantial evidence. And so sounds like that you are ready to put out something that actually could be tried in court and proven.
Oh yeah, and I call it game, set, match. You know, I came up with all the mathematics that proved absolutely there's no way this could be natural, that they were being manipulated. Then we had teams of moms pounding on the doors and finding the phantom voters exactly where we predicted we would find them. So I would call that direct proof too. And now we have the recordings of it, of the actual internet traffic that was taking place to make this happen. You know, imagine if there was a bank robbery and I came to you with the recordings of the bank robbery. You know, how they like show you like one picture every 3 seconds, you know, and you can kind of put it together what was going on. That's what the PCAPS are like. They're snippets of the activity that was taking place during that time. And we could talk about that if you want to. But
so can you actually see through these PCAPS that votes were being changed or added or subtracted?
Yes. Most of the PCAPs are just the machines reporting the current status of the election. You know, people are kind of distracted a little bit by the media. It makes it sound like the machines are flipping votes and changing votes. Well, they do that, but that's not what they do most of the time. Most of the time, they just report what's going on so that people on the outside know which ballots to stuff. So there's a lot of that going on, reporting what's going on. There's also a lot, and I mean a lot of stuffing of the registration databases, adding voters, removing voters, changing who voted. And so instead of John Smith voting, saying Mary Jane voted. And so there's a lot of manipulation of the registration databases, too. It's funny because somebody said, heard somebody saying, oh, we've seen some of those PCAPs, Dr. Frank. They're just a bunch of registration database information. Exactly. That's the main steal. That's the main hack. And that's exactly correct. But we do catch the payloads, they're called, the information that's actually being transferred. A lot of those payloads are software that cause things to change the way that votes are counted and things like that.
And can you trace this to what computers were doing this? Can you trace to where they came from?
That's a brilliant question. PCAPs are like letters. A letter has a to address and a from address. They don't just have the contents. And, you know, they also have a postmark on it. A letter does. And PCAPs are the same way. There'll be a IP address and machine address where the message started from, the routing information that gets it up to the satellite and across the ocean, and then down to the local server and the local router and the local machine. So there's like a complete tracing of the path that the packet took to get to you, as well as exactly a timestamp that's on it. And the beautiful thing about PCAPs is the way they work is it sends the package of information. And when the receiving end receives it, it says, I wonder if this is corrupted or not. So it does a little analysis on it, and then it answers back and says, here's some of the results of my analysis. Is my packet still correct? And so there's like a little extra handshake that's called. It's a confirmation that makes sure that the packet was transmitted correctly. And then once that little extra handshake takes place, then the data are passed on to your computer. And so all that extra little communication is recorded, so you know where it's from and who it's to. Now, there's a thing called a VPN, a virtual network. You know, I can make it look like I'm in China when I'm on the internet. So one of the extra things that Lindell has been doing for several months is he sent teams of people around the world to these various IP addresses, because we were working on the PCAPs in advance to some degree, and sent them around the world to these IP addresses and confirmed that they really were active, that there really were people there actually doing this hacking in real time. So it's not just, you know, your next door neighbor pretending he's in China. It really did come from China.
Wow.
Wow, that's
amazing. This would be the largest conspiracy probably in the history of the world, wouldn't it?
I think it's probably the largest cybercrime. It's funny. I arrived in Cincinnati back from Nebraska. I was in Nebraska last week, and as I walked up to the baggage claim to pick up my bag, they had one of those digital billboards going on, and it said, "The largest threat to small business in America today is cybercrime." And I thought, "Oh my gosh, you know, If businesses understand that this is the largest threat to business in the world today, why can't we understand that it's also the largest threat to our elections? Which it is, and we have all the evidence that it was.
So let me ask you a question. This isn't something that one person or just a small group of people could have done. They would have had to have massive resources to be able to do this, and they would have had to coordinate this. And from my understanding, it'd have to be a coordinated attack. Is that correct?
I think so. And, you know, maybe not as many. We programmers, people who program computers, we understand how powerful we are when we're behind a computer and an internet connection. We can do a lot of things. I like to help people understand it. I could do all of Ohio myself. So if you've got a big enough computer somewhere and a lot of internet connections and some logging in credentials, it can go real easy. You just have to have a big computer somewhere. It's a little more complicated, though, because you don't always have the login credentials, so you need to hack in sometimes. But our programs our hackers are pretty good out there. And, you know, you see it all the time that people are getting hacked. You know, you heard about the power grid on the East Coast getting hacked. And banks get hacked all the time, and there's malware and all sorts of other hacking going on all the time. So all that stuff all kind of compounds together. I would say, you know, it's not one person in the world controlling the election. I would say it's dozens of them with a lot of money and resources and some good connections, and they've bought off a lot of people.
So do you think these are individuals, or is it by government using individuals, empowering them, financing them?
That's a great question. I think it's some of both. So, for example, in America, our CIA and things have been hacking other countries for years, right? We know we are always messing with other people's, other countries' stuff. So it shouldn't be a surprise to us that other countries will want to mess with us. So there's some of that for sure. But I have evidence, and we have whistleblowers, that we also have people in America that are traitors that cooperated with this to get the ends that they wanted. So it's not just foreign actors. We've got some bad actors in our own country, and frankly, they're traitors, and they deserve traitor's treatment.
So you're saying that we have 37 terabytes of proof, and when is this going to come out, and what's going to be the consequence? Are people actually going to be tried for treason doing this?
I think so. Let's just kind of walk through it for a minute. You know, I gave you the example of in the state of Washington, somebody knocking on the Board of Elections door saying, hey, what about these information? So there's going to be a lot of activity after that. But then the next question is going to be, wait a minute, this one had to hack into this computer, but on this computer incursion, they had their credentials. How did they get those credentials? Who gave them their login credentials? And by the way, you think about it, when you log into your computer, you know, Pastor Andrew Womack, and you put in your password, those are your credentials. So what if those were the credentials to get into an election somewhere? Well, we know somebody logged in as you, and we're going to say, hey, what about this, Andrew? Who did you give your credentials to? So I think there'll be some of that kind of prosecution going on and that kind of investigation going on. And it's not going to be pretty. But to boot, we also have some absolutely clear evidence of people that are helping out. And, you know, I've mentioned, for example, in the state of Michigan, I think I mentioned this last time, that 650,000 people were added into the registration rolls ahead of time by executive order of the Secretary of State. And that was done, those people that were added in had been removed legally from the registration rolls. So that's a clear, deliberate act of trying to defeat a legal removal of voters. And then that ended up with having a large surplus. So I think there's some dirty players right there, you know, and, you know, I think maybe those people need to be prosecuted. We've got a lot of evidence like that. People need to be prosecuted.
So if we could find people who were actually doing this and
yes.
hold them accountable, would we be able to flip them and so that they could expose the people who enabled them, gave them the money and the
I 100% think so. In fact, in the movie that Mr. Lindell made about me called Scientific Proof, in that movie, near the end of it, I mean, the last 15 minutes or so, he said, you know, all you people working out there for Dominion, he said, you better turn yourself in now because we got you, man. You want to have to face prosecution later, or do you want to face it now? And, you know, you might as well turn yourself in now and reduce your sentence because later it's going to be bad. So some of those people actually have turned themselves in.
Wow.
They are already cooperating. We have some whistleblowers now, and including some people where if I told you the names, you'd be shocked. Who helped set up the networks around the country to make this possible that are now whistleblowers because they know they're going to be caught.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you and Mike Lindell for being bold and doing this. That Mike Lindell, he just doesn't seem like he cares what they're threatening.
No, that's awesome. So this symposium...
Go ahead.
No, that's the cyber symposium next week. How much of this information is going to be discussed in that event?
Well, if you think about it, it's 37 terabytes is a lot of information. And we've had teams working on this for months and sorting it and screening it and decrypting it and getting it all ready. And that's how we know, for example, that out of our 3,142 counties in the United States, we've already found incursions into 3,009 of them. That's 96%. It could be all the counties. We just haven't gone through every terabyte yet. It's a lot of work. So all of that, Mike's intent, Mr. Lindell's intent, is to release it, all of it, to the public. But it's not like he can just give it to you. Most people would look at it and it would be Greek. They wouldn't understand what it means. So there's a lot of interpretation that has to go on. And think about those envelopes. Sure, we've got the PCAPs, but what's inside matters. What if what's inside is some computer code? Well, most people aren't going to know what that computer code means. So it's going to take experts to say, okay, well, this line of code does this and this line of code does that. So some of it's not going to be immediately useful. But the thing that will be immediately useful, and I've seen some of the PCAPs myself, so I can say with certainty, immediately useful will be X, you know, this is an attack from Beijing, China, going into York, Pennsylvania. And by the way, here's the address of the IP address of their election office. And it even says it right in the PCAP, the name of the router that it logged into. Wow. And the name of the machine that it was going to. So even if you didn't know what it was doing when it got in, right away, we're going to have long lists of IP addresses and not just IP addresses, actual names of election offices. So that's going to be quite a ripple effect right away.
So let me ask you this. I saw that absolute proof with you and Mike Lindell, and he put some of this stuff on the screen. And yeah. There's a lot of conservatives that shared it and stuff, but it didn't gain any national attention. What's going to make it different this time? Are they going to be able to ignore it? Or if you have to dig into this, are these people going to go to that effort?
What a great question. Yeah, Mike's first movie, Scientific Proof, had 150 million views in like the first 2 weeks. And what happened? Nothing. I think it's sort of like, I wouldn't say nothing. But it's sort of like that first effort by Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and whatnot. It's not nothing that happened, but the courts wouldn't take the cases. And so giving everybody all these data didn't really work either. Nowadays, we've got a better strategy that's working. I don't just go into a state and scream, fraud, fraud, fraud. Nuh-uh. I go into a state, I sit down with state legislators, I show them all their data, I show them how their machines are being hacked, I show their registration databases are being hacked. And so now they are coming on board. So now when the PCAP data comes and supports and says, by the way, not only does Dr. Frank's math allow you to predict all the elections in your state, and here are all these super moms collecting all these thousands of ballots from people that didn't exist, and now, by the way, here's recordings that go to your office and hack into your computer, boom, and we're not fighting the legislators. They're already on board. They're already launching their efforts. In fact, we just had one of those come to fruition this week in the state of Wisconsin. And I'm very proud of the fact that I was involved in helping that happen. The week before, I'd given them a complete analysis of Wisconsin, and that was kind of the tipping point for them. Wait till the PCAPs come. I think it's going to be a firestorm.
So you're referring to the news that came out yesterday or a couple days ago that Wisconsin has appointed a special counsel to investigate possibility of criminal charges in the 2020 election?
Absolutely. It's exactly what I'm talking about. And, you know, once you show, we have some gorgeous data that we've uncovered in Wisconsin that shows, I mean, there's no question that there was illegal activity. I can give you one example. In a county that has about 100,000 people in it, they have same-day voter there. And on election day, they registered 8,500 people to vote in that county. And, all of them voted. And then 4 days later, 5,000 of them were removed from the registration rolls. And you might say, what? You signed them up, they vote, and then you remove them again 4 days later? Huh? Exactly. And the reason why that they've been able to get away with that in the past is the counties only report to the state once a month. So they would have reported on November 1 who's registered to vote. On November 3rd, they added 8,500 more who voted. They removed 5,000 of them, and then on December 1, they report only 3,500 more people. And they're not necessarily illegal voters, but maybe those 5,000 were. And we've caught them. We've got each of those steps. So that there's some criminal activity going on there. That's a beautiful example of what all this forensic work we're doing, what it's paying off.
Well, that's a massive job. I can't even imagine how you're able to pursue all of these things. So if you can prove this, are people going to be guilty of treason? Is there going to be jail time or repercussions for them?
Yes, there's no doubt in my mind that we have some real traitors. And I talk to a lot of veterans these days, and they're the guys who have been in the field and seen their buddies die in the field.
I've been right there.
You're a vet as well.
I am.
Are you just going to roll over and let the liberty that your buddies died for just go to waste?
No
way. And that's what I think is happening. You know, as people are waking up, especially our vets, they're saying, hey, my oath is a lifetime oath. I'm still going to serve my country. I think people are rising up, and they're not going to just be happy with, well, let's just slap that guy in the wrist. No way. That person's a traitor. And, you know, my buddies died for less than that. So I think there's going to be some pretty stiff consequences coming up.
You know, my interpretation of some recent headlines is that the Democrats are getting pretty worried because on the national level, the Justice Department sent out a memo warning the states about the possibility of being held liable for Voting Rights Act violations by merely investigating or auditing the election. I mean, that's just nothing more than intimidation. And then here in Colorado, the Secretary of State issued emergency orders saying no one's going to touch our voting machines. You know, I mean, I don't know how else to interpret that except that they're scared of what's going to be found if we can get our hands on that evidence.
Well, we've got our hands on some of the evidence already in Colorado. It's one of the early states I worked in. You guys have some amazing teams there, and we already have the evidence. They're too late, man. They're behind the game. We're ahead of the game. We already got the forensic evidence we need, and we didn't need a big audit like they have in Maricopa.
Yeah, in Colorado, it was some county, I think it was Arapahoe maybe, where 2,000 dead people voted.
Well, there's a number of counties where more people voted than the population of the county. That's pretty obvious.
It's pretty obvious, yes. And I remember during my trip to Colorado several months ago, I was sitting in a county clerk's office, and they said, oh, no, Dr. Frank, we can't have phantom voters. We know all the voters who voted are real people because we have signature verification. And that was when I actually showed her those 2,000 ballots, exactly what you're talking about, Richard. I said, what about these 2,000 people? They're dead. And they're saying, but how can that be? We have signature verification. And my answer was, dead people have really good longhand.
So let me ask you two questions here. Best case scenario, all of this proves voter fraud.
Yes.
How long is it going to take before that happens? And then, if they could prove that the election was stolen, is that going to invalidate Biden's presidency? Is Trump going to be put? What's the results of this?
Well, I don't think it's going to take long after the PCAPs are out for people to come to grips with the fact that the election was stolen. I think that's going to be a pretty short process, a couple of weeks. And despite, you know, the media's attempts to censor us, all of my YouTube pages were taken down, all my Facebook pages were taken down. All the other social media pages are exploding because of that. And you know, I put up a post the other day, 150,000 people saw it. So, you know, the word is going to get out. All those PCAPs are going to go out. We've been organizing teams around the country of super moms that are going to knock on those Board of Election doors. So the word's going to get out. And as that gains traction, I bet you the media is pretty much hopping within a month of that. And there'll be lawsuits popping up everywhere and fraud investigations everywhere. So within a month, let's say that happens. But there's an important principle here. And I was on an interview with Sidney Powell recently. She said, and it was an excellent comment. She said, I'm not an attorney, I'm a scientist. So I listen to my attorneys for this stuff. But she said, legal precedent is that fraud vitiates all subsequent wrongful decisions. So it doesn't matter if an election's been certified or not, doesn't matter. If there's been fraud, every decision made after that because of the fraud can be undone, can be vitiated, can be vacated. So all the decisions that happened since can automatically be undone. And if you look through history, there have been a lot of elections that have been where fraud has been proven, and so they take out the person and put in the person who actually won. We just never had it happen on a presidential level. And I'm a scientist and altruistic, so of course I have rose-colored glasses on. I'd like it to be rapid. I'd like the country to stand up and say, wow, this thing was ripped off. Let's do a do-over, or let's put Trump back in office. And I'll tell you, here's something fun for you. Richard, you're a lawyer. How many years can a president be in office? How many years? Do you know that? It's in the Constitution. If you don't know, I don't want to put you on the spot.
Oh, well, he can be in office
two terms.
He can have two consecutive terms. If it's not consecutive, then there's no limit on the number of terms he can serve. So,
go ahead.
Well, Trump has served one term, so that's 4 years.
Yes.
But if he's reelected, he can have eight more if he's reelected a second time. Yeah.
Someone told me the other day, you'll have to double check because I'm not the legal expert. So somebody told me the other day that a president cannot serve more than 10 years, but they can be appointed in the middle of a term, and then they can be elected twice. I mean, maybe you'll have
true.
To follow up on it.
That's true.
And so, think about it. He's already served the one term. What if he could finish two more and then be elected again? That would be a pretty ideal situation. We could get all 10 years out of Mr. Trump if we wanted.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Honestly, I would love to see that because I think he's one of the greatest presidents of my lifetime.
I agree.
But,
mm-hmm.
but I have to admit that even if that didn't happen, if we can just expose the fraud and reclaim our elections, that at least would be a wonderful accomplishment in my
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. If we could stop the voter fraud so that the subsequent,
yes.
that would be well worth all of the effort.
Yeah.
Exactly. That'd but I just think when the American people face the fact that it was stolen, I don't think they're just going to sit back and say, well, okay, we'll let it go and just do it again. I don't think so. I think there, and what people need to understand is it's not just the top of the ticket. Everybody thinks it's all about Trump versus Biden. There's tons of down ballot stuff, tons of conservative judges that were unelected that there's no reason that they should have been unelected, and school boards and ballot initiatives and tax levies, tons of stuff at the local level that everybody's looking at each other. Did you vote for that guy? I didn't vote for that guy. Lots of other manipulation. So I think once everybody comes to grips with the fact that it was stolen, that it was fraudulent, I don't think that people are just going to say, well, we'll just do it next time. I don't think so. I think we're going to step up and say, we're going to clean this up.
So let me ask you, if we could prove treason and these people go to jail, yeah. would there be a way that, like the news media or some of the politicians who have just presented a lopsided view, that they could be shown that they were obstructing justice by their things? Would they also be liable for some type of censure or punishment?
I think some of our Secretary of States have since realized that their election was corrupted. Maybe not beforehand. They might have had suspicions, but now I think many of them are already wise to the fact that they were fraudulent elections. And for them to remain quiet, I think that makes them culpable. I think we ought to go after them. I met with my Ohio Secretary of State recently, and I told him, I said, look, I want you guys to be the heroes. Let me bring in the best data we have in the United States and the best cyber teams. We'll show you all the vulnerabilities in Ohio. You guys can lead the nation in election reform. I'll make you all into heroes. And they looked at me and they said, no, Doug, our election was secure. It was the safest in history. And I'm like, no, you guys aren't listening. I have recordings of your election taking place with machines that aren't connected to the internet, okay? So don't tell me that, you know, that they were secure. They're not. Here's all the fraud. I show them evidence that, no, we want egg on our face. So, okay, fine. So they're going to have egg on their face. I think those guys, they need to be thrown out of office because I think they know darn well that their election was hacked, but they're not willing to admit up to it.
But that's wisdom on your part, because if you don't want the credit and if you're willing to give them the credit and give them the information,
Absolutely.
Boy, that plays to their ego, some of them, that would be a way out.
I tried to convince them, look, you know, you were hacked just like everybody else was hacked. It's not, you know, I'm not blaming you. I am blaming some of them around the country. I think some of them sold out. But, you know, in my case, you know, I don't have any direct evidence that my Secretary of State is an evil man or something like that. I just think maybe he's trying to protect himself. You know, he's afraid if he's certified the election and we find out it was fraudulent, that'll hurt him. I think that's the wrong way for him to look at it. I think it'll hurt him more after he's been saying and sticking to his guns that it was perfectly secure and we show him it wasn't. Then he's going to have egg on his face. I think he should step up. I've already been famous once before. I don't need to be famous again. He can be the hero.
You know, I've got a friend who's a senator in Arizona, and he's part of the group who's doing a review of all of their elections, and he didn't give me the details, but he says it's going to be major when they put all this information out. So once this information starts coming out in not just one state, but multiple states, Hopefully,
yes,
some of these people will be like rats from, yes, a sinking ship. They're going to jump ship and,
yes,
start trying to take credit for things. So, mm-hmm, hopefully,
and by the way, that's already happening. It's just not public yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know how when COVID started, anybody who suggested that this thing originated in the Wuhan lab was called a xenophobe, right, and you're a, yeah, racist and all this. Well, finally, now everybody's, you know, recognizing that fact. And I think the election fraud is going to be similar. Eventually, they won't be able to deny it anymore. Do you know any specifics about the Arizona audit? And I know the counting is done now. And when should we expect,
yes,
a report? And how monumental is it going to be?
I do know some specifics. I was asked early on to peer review their strategy, and their strategy had some merit. It also has some drawbacks. And so early on, I was asked to do a complete analysis of Arizona, and I did. And one of the things my analysis showed was that there had to be a minimum. I mean, this is a bottom floor minimum of 200,000 false ballots. Are false,
wow,
phantom voters in Maricopa. Mm. So one of the
that's just
one
in of Maricopa.
The, just one county.
That's just Maricopa.
Wow.
And one of the strategies was to try to see if they could identify which of the ballots were the false ballots. But that's a difficult thing to do because a lot of the ballots are printed on the actual paper, and a lot of times the ballots are real ballots. They're just from somebody who didn't really vote, or for somebody who, you know, didn't really order the ballot, but it was delivered somewhere else and things like that. There's a lot of ways to get real ballots into the system, even though they aren't real voters behind them. So my point is that that some of their audit stuff is going to show a lot of interesting information, but it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts. There are a lot of little buckets of votes. You know, we have several thousand dead people and several thousand people who moved away, but yet we still have a ballot from them, and several thousand people who still live there who say they didn't vote, but we still have ballots from them, and several people who can't spell their name because they've got dementia or something like that, yet they somehow voted. You know, it goes up. There's several buckets, and so it adds up, and the number is big. And there are also situations where, for example, counties don't print their own ballots. They send out print orders, and they have more ballots than they ordered. So more ballots came back than they sent out orders for. So that's, you know, that's interesting too. But when you put it all together, it's a little confusing, a little convoluted. It's not like one silver bullet. So I think the information you're getting is probably correct, which is there's going to be a lot of good stuff that comes out, but it's not like one clear silver bullet. But imagine all that information, and then you put the PCAPs on top of it in 2 weeks from now, where you say, by the way, we've got all these phantom voters, and here's the electronic activity that was taking place to create them. Boom. That will amplify the power of the Maricopa audit, whereas by itself, you know, it might not be as compelling. I like the canvassing strategy that they started with, Liz Harris started at the beginning, for finding the phantom ballots. I mean, think about it. If you don't even need the audit, if she can find 50,000 people, or if she can go up to the Board of Elections and say, by the way, here are 50,000 people you think voted and they don't exist, that's pretty good evidence right there. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you don't even need the rest of the audit. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that's a pretty compelling thing just in itself.
So you've got multiple factors that are going to make this point.
Mm-hmm.
I know that our viewers are wanting to ask you a question. This is a real opportunity, so let's take some questions here.
All right. Well, the most important question I see, and there's a long list here, but the most important one that I see is, how can I be one of the super moms that helps track down phantom ballots?
Well, you're there in Colorado, right?
Well, these questions could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
that's true. Well, that's true too. Well, what I've tried to do is kind of identify one top super mom per state, because I've got a lot of work to do and I just can't talk to every super mom. So in the state of Colorado, for example, you've got an amazing super mom. Her name is Sharona Bishop. She's running things there. In the state of Pennsylvania, you've got a team of three super moms, and Tony Shoup is one of them. And out in New Hampshire, you've got Marilyn Todd. So all around the country, you know, each state's kind of got its super mom. So I would advise you, if you wanted to be one of them super moms, and we love our super moms, they're going to save our country. They got the mama bear claws. if you want to be one of those, go on to my Telegraph page, go on to our Telegram page, follow the data with Dr. Frank, and just ask me, and I will forward your request to one of the supermoms in your state and get you connected. If you're in Ohio, I would send you to Jessica France. If you were in the state of Washington, I'd send you to Tambourine or Lacey. There are people all across the country. They're top moms. Indiana, I'd send you to Susie Barnhart. We got great, great leaders.
Oh, that's great information.
That's really good. All right, well, here's another question, which is, what platforms should we rely on for truth? I'm assuming they're asking about voter integrity information, but they might also be asking a bigger question of
about just news.
Just where do we go to get good information these days?
You know, last year was really an education for us, wasn't it? We lived in a society where every day the media lied to us about COVID.
Yeah.
And our governments lied to us about COVID. And I mean, they're still lying to us about COVID. And it sounds so conspiratorial, but it's just the truth. And you know, Facebook has shut down all of my pages. YouTube has shut down my pages. They are trying to suppress the truth too. So, you know, here I am on your program. Your program is a source of truth and liberty, right? And then there are other patriots out there that have got podcasts. It, you know, the internet's kind of the bane, but it's also a boon to us, because we can all talk to each other. Here's something I heard the other day. Somebody who's on shortwave radio called me up and said, did you know you're all over shortwave? I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, they're all talking about Dr. Frank on shortwave. So the word is getting out any and every way it can.
We'll use smoke signals if we have to.
Exactly. So, I guess I would just say you can pretty much ignore the mainstream channels. You're not going to count on them for truth. I think what's going to happen is it's going to swell so much everywhere else that it overflows into those channels. But I wouldn't rely on them for good information.
Amen. Well, one of the viewers here, the next question is, are there patterns in the last election that can be used to train systems, I think he means systems operators, to detect manipulation in the next election?
Oh, yeah, all kinds of patterns. But just ask yourself the question, I don't care how good a pattern detector you have, you shouldn't be connected to the internet. In fact, during an election, it's illegal. It's against federal law for the machines to be connected to the internet. So you'll hear a lot of our officials say, the machines are not connected to the internet. They'll say that. But they're sort of right, because the machines are off today. They're not connected. But also they're sort of right, because the machines, when they are turned on, are connected to file servers that are connected to the internet. So as long as we have all this electronic stuff, I don't care. I'm a programmer. I don't trust myself. There's no electronic and computer system that can't be hacked. And, you know, this is the most powerful country in the world. So if you're going to hack something, this is the target. So I just think it's a mistake to even try to think that way, to try to think, well, the next election, we should protect ourselves by looking for patterns. I think we should just, I've been making a joke lately, I think we should vote Amish. No electricity. Just everything's on paper. We need to have paper poll books. We need to have paper ballots. And, you know, those super moms can sit there for a couple hours at the end of the day and count up the ballots. And it's a lot cheaper and faster. It worked great when I was a kid.
You know, I don't know if it was you, but one of our guests that we had on here said that they actually had proof that some of the thermostats in the rooms that they were in, that they had actually rigged them so that they were wireless stations and they could connect that way.
That might have been me, because I tell that story because that actually happened in Georgia. That was proven in court that the machines were actually connecting through the Wi-Fi hotspots in the thermostats.
Yeah.
Amazing. And it's, you know, it's crazy that we would allow ourselves to be vulnerable like this. So let's just not use the machines. You know, let's just have a day where we celebrate our liberty together and we vote together and count it at the end of the day and be done with it. And then it's secure and it's cheap. And we had a day of celebration because, you know, people have died for this amazing liberty that's God-given and man-earned.
I guess the liberals would come out and say, but that's voter suppression, because not everybody's going to be able to get to the polls on that day and, you know, all of this stuff.
That's what absentee ballots are for.
Yep.
So How many states, this viewer wants to know, how many states have you analyzed, and are your findings consistent in every state?
Yes, I've done over 20 states myself, personally. But there are other people that have used confirmed my analyses in their states, and they've also confirmed about another 10 states. So round numbers, 30 states. And you know, it's like we're past the point where you're even looking for patterns anymore. We already know it's everywhere. Now we're in the stage where how do we organize? It's sort of like, you know, there's been a murder. We already know there's a dead body. Now we're trying to figure out how they're doing these murders. That's sort of the mode we're in right now. But it does help to have the analyses, because, for example, I was just in the state of Nebraska last week, and I can tell them, your elections were hacked, and people might believe me. But when I actually show them the data being hacked, it's very compelling. So, for example, I'm going to be in New Hampshire shortly, and Wisconsin and Michigan, I've already shown them their data. It does help a lot to motivate the people to see their own hack and their own voting intrusions.
So you've mentioned talking to some of these people. Have you actually presented this like to legislatures? Are there people that are in the U.S. or Senate legislatures who are going to do something with this?
Absolutely. I was in Utah 2 weeks ago, and one of their head congressmen is leading the charge in their state. And like I just mentioned in Wisconsin, the head of their election integrity committee for their state legislature is leading the charge, and we've equipped them. So absolutely, and I'm being careful. I'm going to just stop right there. There are a lot of legislators around the state, around the country that I'm working with, and we don't want to reveal their name yet because it until all of our ducks in a row, we don't expose them.
Do you have anybody on a federal level in the federal the U.S. Congress that is
yes.
received your information?
Yes.
Well, good man. That's encouraging.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Well. And they have no doubt that it's correct. And the thing is, you know, if you imagine yourself I keep coming back to this battle analogy, but it is a war. It's an information war. You know, if you just run out in front of the machine guns and they shoot you, that's not a very smart way to fight. It's better to have all your ducks in a row and have an organized strategy. So
yeah, I remember Patton saying to his troops, he says, I don't want you to die for your country. I want you to make your enemy die for their country.
That's great.
I'm going to use that one. I remember that quote. That's a good one.
Yeah,
thank you for that.
That is
Pastor.
A really good one. Dr. Frank, so speaking of strategy, this next viewer wants to know, well, he's questioning whether it's a good strategy to reveal all this information before the criminal indictments are prepared, and are you giving the opposition a leg up?
That's a great question, and it's one of the reasons, you know, people are asking, how come Mr. Lindell didn't just release it all at once? And that's exactly one of the reasons, because we want, there are some information that it makes great sense to get out there to get the wave, to get the movement of people to enforce the correction of the election. But there's definitely some people that are implicated in the PCAPs, and we will protect that, not because we're trying to protect the people, but because we're building a case.
Mm. Excellent.
So you're right. That's a fabulous question. There's also another issue. When Mr. Lindell was trying to set up the conference in July instead of August, the venue leaked out, and the opposition reserved all the hotel rooms in the area to mess up the conference.
30.
So in August, you know, Mr. 30. Lindell flew his jet up to see Kristi Noem in South Dakota, and they planned the whole thing out before anybody could know. And they settled on a really good venue in Sioux Falls. They've got all the security. They got the state police and the state National Guard and everything all set up. So nobody's going to be able to mess with this event. It's the security. And he reserved 11 hotels, every room in 11 hotels before
wow.
it was announced where it was going to be. So it's over 1,000 rooms. And hopefully we have politicians and legislators and media people and cyber experts from all around the world who want to converge there.
You know, for the opposition to occupy all of those rooms, somebody's got a lot of money behind this thing.
Yeah.
And I could guess who that is.
It could just be that they were reserving them, you know, and then they, you know, they canceled the reservation so they didn't get charged. But I don't know. I just know. And then the month before, they were starting to plan it and they were running into legal issues. And Richard can probably comment better on this than me. But if you think about it, recording an election, hacking into an election is illegal. And so all the data that we have might have been illegally obtained. And I guess I shouldn't hedge about that. Some of it was obtained by white hat hackers. I'm 100% certain of that. And of course, that's illegal. So they would get whistleblower status. So there were legal questions that came up and we had to pause and figure out how we were going to do all that. You know, there were threats that the FBI was just going to, you know, seize upon us and take all the data. And that wouldn't be good. So their strategies had to be put in place.
Well, Dr. Frank, maybe one more question here. Sure. This viewer wants to know, what about the rhinos? Do you think they were in on it?
I think the rhinos are our number one enemy because they're on our side, but they're not fighting for us. And they're fighting against us. We need them to step up and say, yeah. Now, are some of them complicit? Yes. Some of them are dirty. And in fact, some people will say to me, well, gee, Dr. Frank, if they mess with the election, how come this Republican won or how come that Republican won? Well, maybe this and that Republican aren't as Republican as you'd like them to be, as you like to think they are. You know, maybe they're dirty. Maybe the reason they get elected is because they're controllable.
Also, it's, I think, Marx that said you need some people who are knowing what they're doing. They're community disruptors and stuff, but then they need a lot of useful idiots that'll follow them. And there's some people that just have bought into the lies that people are saying and think that they're doing the right
correct.
Thing. They're deceived.
That's correct.
You know, if we don't do something now, this situation, I'm assuming you would agree, is not going to get any better. In fact, it's probably going to get more and more locked down and they'll perfect their practices.
Yes.
Is that how you see it too?
Absolutely. You know, at the Wellington rally where I was the speaker, it was funny. I liked the president's joke. He said, you know, I guess they're just going to have to elect me a third time. and I think that's a good joke, you know, and I laughed, but I also don't like it because it's not funny because, no, he really won the second time. And Mr. Lindell said in that movie Scientific Proof, he says it's a good thing that Trump lost or we wouldn't know that we'd lost our country. And knowing we've lost our country people are coming to grips with that because he lost. And, you know, we can't just elect a president and say, okay, Trump's going to fix everything. I'm going to go play golf. We're the government. We got to fix our country. And this is kind of waking us all up. And it's almost a boon that they did the COVID thing to us for a year because now we got a bunch of really angry supermoms. I mean, their claws are out. And all I have to do is just kind of aim them away from masks and stupid vaccines and aim them over at elections a little bit. Man, I got an army.
Dr. Frank, I'm going to have to break in. We've only got 38 seconds left. But man, thank you for being with us. What an honor to have you. And if people want information about you, we'll put that on the screen so they can contact you.
Sure.
We also want to thank CTN for carrying this on their network. That's always a blessing. And we want to thank all of you who've watched. And I believe that this is going to encourage you that, praise God, God Amen. Is doing a lot of things. We're going to see things turn around. I believe we are beginning to see the third great awakening.
Amen.
So thank you for being with us. Thank you for joining us. Remember, we do this every Monday night at 6 p.m. God bless you. We'll see you next week. There is a time for us to stand up. And I'm saying that it is time for the body of Christ to rise up and get out of the four walls of a church.
One of the responsibilities of the church and Christians is to destroy the works of the devil wherever we find them.
The real love, the real peace, the real joy doesn't come by being triggered by everything, but by being vertically connected to the Creator of the universe and having His life flow through you.
Father, I I just believe that this is helping wake the church up. And I thank you that as each one of us goes out and does our part to follow, this is going to make a difference.
Join us next time for the Truth and Liberty broadcast. Find tonight's episode and related articles and links at truthandliberty.net. Truth and Liberty is viewer-supported. If you'd like to help us continue our live casts, you can make a donation at truthandliberty.net.